Wait. If no one fights, no one dies.
Oh, quit moping. You're alive.
Baker isn't.
One lucky kill don't make you an expert.
That wasn't the first life I've taken. Or the 21st.
Trepkos, Mellish. Let's go.
Look, we can fight them. But only if we stop fighting each other.
Now!
I'm giving you another way out.
I'll kill him quick.
By episode recap of Angel that will take you as long to listen to as it would for you to watch the show. With me is Wolfcast, aka Ruben, and this is Pod, aka Marsha. How's it going today?
Good. Is this an incoming message from the higher powers or just a normal podcast?
Oh gosh, I didn't have it in front of me. Yes, it is an incoming message from the higher powers.
Clearly I'm the Cordelia to your Angel.
Oh my god, should I do it again?
No, it's good.
Okay, good.
I like mistakes. They make us more human. I'm doing fine. It's my one of the middle of my weekend. I get a 3-day weekend at my job, so that's cool. I'm probably gonna go to Atlanta tomorrow and see a movie.
Oh, cool.
What about you?
It's good. I
was gonna say, how's the move?
It's been good. I actually lost all of my dress clothes, like my work clothes. So, and one of the things I hate the most is shopping for fancy work clothes. So I had to go back out and get everything again. I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah, that's annoying.
Yeah. But other than that, everything was real smooth.
Speaking of things that are both smooth and annoying, today we're going to be talking about The Ring, episode 16 of season 1 of Angel. It's my turn to give the plot description, which is this. At Angel Investigations, a man shows up and says that his brother has been attacked / kidnapped by some demons, and he's looking for their help. But it turns out to be a trap to capture Angel as part of a underground demon fighting ring. Angel tries to refuse to fight while Wesley and Cordelia search for him and find a way for him to get out and unlock his mystical key and whatnot. And we also get introduced to Lila, and the bad guys are murdered. That's it.
Pretty good synopsis.
What did you think of this episode, Mercer?
I've always liked this episode. And it's probably, I don't know. No, I mean, I like it, yeah. It's very Angel. And it's very David Boreanaz. Because it kind of sort of brings up the whole gambling thing. But it's also very Angel in that it doesn't really address it. But then you get him like white knight. That's a pejorative. You get him saving people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like this episode. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Oh, I was gonna say there's some good action in this episode too.
I like this episode too. It's one of those episodes that there's certain episodes that I have like notions of that. Like, even though at this point I've seen the show enough that I know that they're wrong, for some reason every time I go in to watch the episode, like, the notion comes back to me, like, this is such a cheesy premise, and I dislike the movie Gladiator so much, which came out, like, a couple months after this. Apparently this was, like, a big thing in the early 2000s, that I always feel like I'm gonna dislike this episode, but no, I like this episode. I give it a B.
I feel like... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, we get some cool things, like, I think this is sort of the first moment of badass Wesley that we're, you know, that we're gonna get. This is our introduction to Lila, who's one of my favorite characters in the show in general, and, you know, it expands on the idea that a demon who isn't committed to evil is a creature worth saving. And that Angel is going to be a world of gray areas, or more gray areas than Buffy was.
Yeah, exactly. And I like that, like, this episode is very masculine, but I like that they didn't actually sink all the way down into sort of unquestioning. I feel like this episode questions masculinity.
Well, Cordelia's the hero.
Yeah.
Her and her Palomino, Keanu.
But yeah, you want to dig into the episode?
Mm-hmm. Starts off with a scene between Wesley and Cordelia discussing the newly released, I wonder by who put the investment in this, maybe the Watchers Council, demon online demons database called Demons, Demons, Demons.
Hilarious.
Title that Wesley notes is rife with single entendre. They're arguing, you know, about technology versus classic study, and I feel like, of course, there's a place for both in the world, but that's not a way to set up jokes. So, of course, Wesley is shamed later on in the episode for not being able to find something as quickly as a computer can.
Remember when Willow was a computer expert?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she set it up in this,
yeah.
On the side.
They, I know they use it in season 7 of Buffy. I can't remember if they use it earlier than that.
Nice.
The Demon, Demon, Demons database to look up Gnarl in basically a similar scene where they're like, oh, you're not going to be able to find this. And then Dawn is like, found it.
This was just, to their defense, this was just when the internet started getting really useful as a research tool.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, unlike, say, the episode about Willow falling in love with the computer demon, this one seems very pro-internet, in the sense that Wesley seems, you know, dated.
Yeah. I don't remember the context, but the next note that I have is push-up bra in all caps with a bunch of question marks behind it.
Wesley says something mildly sexist about, you know, how he doesn't spend his evenings going out to, like, the latest bar wearing a push-up bra.
Yes.
And then she says something about, like, him watching Jeopardy and drinking tea and going, watch out, ladies, this one can't be tamed. So, you know, more playful, semi-sexist tinge sniping at each other.
It's the best type of sniping.
Mm-hmm. When this guy arrives and says that his McNamara says that his younger brother has gambling issues and that he's always paid off his debts and that he finally got fed up and he was like, I said that I wasn't going to pay it off, and then these demons showed up and beat me up, and then they sent me his little finger in the mail, and I wrote down, younger brothers are always the worst. Which I can confirm as a younger brother.
Yeah.
You're the younger sibling, right, Marcia?
Oh, yeah.
Aren't we the worst?
No, I'm the best. It's just younger brothers. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, and then the guy's like, they weren't people. Dun, dun, dun.
Credits.
Roll credits.
Yeah, so Angel, you know, of course, takes the case and is, asks him who is the bookie that he was indebted to and goes to find him, and he's upset that his juice is wheatgrass. He wanted the kiwi cooler. Wheatgrass is better for you, though, probably. I thought the shots at the alley were nice.
Yeah.
And even though it's, like, super goofy, the part where Angel pretends that a $100 bill is a lighter.
I think it's awesome. It's
pretty smooth.
So smooth. And I really liked the line here, like, Jack doesn't have any friends, just people he doesn't owe.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if you've known anyone in that situation, that resonates.
Yeah. Poor people in that situation, though. Having friends is great.
right.
And then I wrote down that so Wesley and Cordelia are searching for the demons based on the description from the elder McNamara. I can't remember his name. Obviously, you just mentioned the younger McNamara's Jack.
Isn't it Danon or Damien? Danon?
I don't know. I can look it up. I have a page open right here.
Yeah.
Darren. Yeah. He's given them a description I wrote down. It's kind of strange that he gave them an accurate description of the demons, considering that's eventually going to be a piece of information that they're going to use to find them, but maybe he's just not worried about them finding the demon ring or being able to do anything about it once they have Angel.
Right.
This is when we get the part when, Wesley is describing the demon, and she says, "Add a portion hair plugs, and I've dated this guy a lot."
Yeah, isn't the description like pasty, no hair?
Yeah. You could, when they're screaming or mating, when they're fighting or mating, they scream cowardliness. Yeah.
And their outfits, like, obviously, in the next scene, Angel tracks them down in this, like, underground cave or somewhere. And yeah, they're all wearing, like, silk pajamas, like Hugh Hefner pajamas.
Yeah, that bookie told him that that's where he needed to go. And then he uses that to find the Howard demons. And then he follows that piece of evidence to the ring where we meet Lila.
Yeah, because he defeated the Howler demons, right? And
yeah,
and they told him, "Oh, we sold that guy."
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I thought it was strange that there were so many people at the demon fighting ring, because that means that a lot more people know about demons in the Angel universe than I feel like do in the Buffy universe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they sort of talk about it.
Oh, it's a much bigger city, though.
Mm, that's true. Maybe that's it.
Like, but yes, I mean, it is true that in the world of Buffy, that even a cataclysmic event like the mayor turning into a snake and then blowing up the school to defeat him can somehow be brushed under the rug, whereas like an Angel, it seems like there are constant underground societies that are interacting with demons in other ways. Like, there's this one, and then I also remember the one is a bunch of rich people who think that werewolf is the best tasting thing in the world, and so they have to so they get werewolves and eat them.
Right. Nasty.
Yeah.
So
they obviously know about demons too.
So Angel's in here at the demon ring, and he sees, you know, the demons are fighting, and one of them kills the other one. And then he sees
Crep Block or whatever.
Yeah.
A crowd pleaser.
Then he sees Jack looking...
Trepkos.
Krepkos?
Trepkos. It sounds Greek.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a nod to this whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And he sees Jack and he follows him. And then turns out that he finds out that it's a trap, and they give him the old cattle prod treatment.
Yeah. So the camera slowly pans down under the streetlight. Aren't we given like a slice away effect of the street?
Probably.
I thought that was a cool shot. I always like that sort of thing. And then Angel shows off how many languages he can speak.
Yeah, like, I don't like the part before that when he's trying to, like, bond with that guy with humor. When he's like, oh, I asked for a room with a view or whatever. But then when he starts listing off the languages, I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
He's like, hablo español en Belarusia.
Sprechen Deutsch. Doesn't he pull out German or...
English, Spanish, Belarusian, and Italian are apparently the four languages that Angel speaks, which,
at least
makes
four.
Sense. Based on his travels, it makes sense, yeah.
And then it turns out the whole thing is demon trafficking.
Mm-hmm. So then he learns what's going on, and we get some, exposition that is actually weaved well into when they're explaining what the little wrist bracelet thing is. You need 21 kills to escape, and if you cross the red line, you turn into dust. Which is a rare talent. I just saw a movie last Friday, and I wrote about how I was frustrated because I've been watching a lot of Buffy and Angel, how those shows normally succeed in making exposition seem like not exposition, like giving you relevant information but still making it seem like a normal human interaction. And this movie that I saw, there were at least three times where people were like, so what does this device do again? And then someone was like, these are the qualities of this device. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, they're really bad about that in shows like NCIS or any kind of crime show too.
Mm-hmm. I don't really watch those shows, so I wouldn't know, but I believe it.
Yep.
And it's like the example that was in the episode of Buffy is that they were at a frat house, and Xander walks up to a woman looking at a plaque, and then he reads the plaque out loud as like a way of flirting with her. He's like, are you impressed with my knowledge of history or my knowledge of reading? And it's like, cool, now we know the name of the house and when it was founded, which is important, relevant information for the rest of the episode. But they played it off as a joke, as opposed to, you know, two of the people who lived there being like, did you know that this place is called the Lowell House? I did not. When was it founded? 1926. Wow, that was a long time ago.
Let us get on with our normal lives.
drink. So yeah, it's cool. I mean, it's a kind of a minor point, but like, it's something that when writers miss, it makes writing sound really awkward and unpleasant to watch.
It's true. And one of the things that I admire about Angel is how immersive it is. Like, I'm not usually jarred out of the episode by something completely dumb. I notice on this go-round, I'm paying a lot more attention to it's minor sexism, but the little jokes at people's expense that's thrown in there.
Yeah, I feel like that's, for whatever reason, I feel like season one of Angel and season four of Buffy are a slight turning point as far as that's concerned.
Yeah,
that things start to get better from this point on. But I mean, I've definitely noticed it watching Buffy for definitely Doomed as well, that it's a lot more slut-shamey than I remembered.
Yeah. So, at this point, Cordy and Wesley have noticed that Angel is missing.
Yep, and he's not someone who tans well, as Cordy mentions. So, they're worried about him, and Wesley's like, I'm going to follow his trail. And I hate the physical humor of him being like, you know, grabbing the crossbow or whatever, and then pulling everything out with it.
Yep.
'Cause I think that joke is dumb, but I think that the joke after that is actually really good, so I'm not exactly sure how you would excise it when he goes... along with a few other things. He tries to cover for the fact that he's pulling everything out of the file cabinet, which is not a great place to keep weaponry.
Probably not.
By the way.
Filed under K for knife. And then Angel, we have the scene.
I wrote down crib rules.
Yeah, I wrote down prison rules.
I wrote down crib rules.
Yeah.
You know, the prisoner who's, I think, supposed to be black. But
oh, yeah. This is the part of the show where they can't have black people. They have to have demons that talk and act and look like black people.
I don't remember if it was an article or a video, something that was like, that I saw that was about how in sci-fi fantasy, people of color are almost always put under loads of makeup.
Oh, yeah.
And that's sad and insulting. But luckily we have Gun coming. Gun.
Yay! I'm looking forward to getting done with his horrible episodes and getting into his good episodes.
When is that? Season 3? End of season 2?
Once he starts the Flowers for Algernon story, I'm in.
Oh, well, that's season 5.
Yeah. Probably even before that, because he's such a good character by that point. But as soon as he stops acting like a stereotype written by someone who's never met a black person, then that's good.
There is one lampshading joke about that I think works really well. When there's a band that he wants to see and he thinks Angel has bought tickets for everyone to go see that band, and he says, like, you know, y'all, he's like, this band is off the hook, y'all are gonna be tripping out or something like that. But then it turns out that Angel's bought tickets to the ballet and Gunn is upset about that, and he's like, no man, this ballet is off the hook, you're gonna be tripping out. And he's like, don't be using my words when we've lost the trust. And I feel like that's own internal comment on the writer seeing themselves as Angel and like trying to sound like have a black voice with no black writers
right.
on the staff. Hopefully the actor J. August Richards helped write some of his lines.
Right.
You need a black voice to make a black character.
Yeah, it was painful there. The thing that bothered me about this prison rule scene, so what happens is there's a little demon, and the big demon steals his food. And Angel...
Crib steals his food.
Yeah. And Angel gets it back for the little demon, the little guy.
Yeah.
And when I say little, I mean, like, he's an average-sized guy, but everyone else is just taller.
Yeah. I mean, everyone else is, like, a big, muscly demon, and he's just, like, you know, a 5'8 dude or whatever with, like, a coat with spikes on it.
Yeah. So the thing that bothers me is that afterwards, the normal-sized demon tries to get back his honor and his manliness, and it was a little uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I like about that scene, besides Crib's acting, which I think is pretty good,
awesome,
is there's a small smile from Trepkos when Angel intervenes.
Right.
Like, it's very, very tiny, like, it barely crosses his mouth, and it's kind of like, this thing that Angel did is conveying the information that he wants to convey, which is that, you know, he's about fairness, and he doesn't see what's happening as fair, and he doesn't want anyone to die.
Is it...
You know, and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, and just that, you know, sort of continues that this guy is like, I don't want anyone standing up for me, or whatever. And he's like, I'll take you on. And Angel's like, nah, I'm not interested in that.
is it Trepkos with a T?
Yeah, that's what the wiki says.
Is he the dinosaur headplate demon?
Yeah.
He's got an Ankylosaurus head. It's awesome. So after that scene, Wesley finds the bookie, right, that they were originally referred to by Darren.
Yeah, and this is when I was mentioning when I said that the start of Badass Wesley, when you know, he threatens them that he's going to, you know, hurt them if they don't return him to Angel, and then he shoots that guy in the hand with the crossbow and picks up the gun and is like, drop those now, please. um, I wrote down there's a close up on the punch, like the cut is like on the bookie like punching the camera. And then it cuts to Wesley in the door. I think it's funny.
Oh yeah, because when he shows up, they're like trying to make an example out of some guy who didn't pay his debts.
Yeah, and Wesley's like, stop that. And then after he, you know, wiggles the arrow in the guy's hand to get him to reveal Angel's location and what happened, he finds out about the ring, and he goes and to the demon place, and he and Cordelia go to the demon place after they manage to juke some dumb rich people out of their tickets.
Hilariously.
By pretending to be police cops. Something's going down with the man.
Yeah, they pretend, the guy's like, my dad's on the force, or who was on the force that he knew? Someone.
He just said, I'm a close friend with your boss.
Yeah.
And then he like was the head of the, you know.
And they were like, we're not sure, but there's probably something going to happen tonight. And they're like, oh no, a raid. And they walk off.
And he's like, but we could just leave, right? And they're like, I think that would be best.
Wesley's badge flash is the best thing about that.
Yeah. I also like when, I can't remember what Cordelia says, but he goes, answer the detective! Just good.
She's like, We all know we've been waiting this whole time for some juicy boxing ring footage, and the boxing ring is so great. There's like lights all over, and there's concrete, and there's people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice change of pace from just like parking garage, some spa, you know, LA scene.
Yeah, it's an actual set.
Right.
Unlike The Initiative, which is something that Bazan and I have been making fun of every time we see it in season 4 Buffy, which is like an empty warehouse with a hole in the ground covered in aluminum foil. These Octavian matches date back to the Roman Empire, thanks Wesley. I heard they had a revival. Couldn't they just do West Side Story? I agree, West Side Story is really good, Cordelia. There's a part I didn't write down whose eyes I was describing, so I don't know if it's the demon that Angel kills or Angel's eyes himself, but I wrote down the look in the eyes is sad.
Yeah, Angel is put in the match and he eventually kills in self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes up with literal blood on his hands.
Yep. Takes him 7 minutes and 33 seconds to be forced to kill. It's I wrote that down because it's like, Trefkos' kills all take like less than a minute.
Yeah.
I also wrote down as a possible quote that we could use, and I forgot to mention it pre-podcast, is when the announcer goes, "The Vampire Angel!"
We can only use that as a quote if the quote is actually a link to somewhere where you're actually saying it like that. But if so, yes. Angel tries to convince everyone else to rebel when he comes back in from the ring.
Yeah, and they say that, you know, it's hard to, the McNamara say it's hard to be convincing when, you know, you just murdered a guy. To be all brotherhood, and this is the second reference to Gandhi in the episode, and just to take a moment, first of all, since he's trying to free enslaved people, I feel like Moses would be a better choice, and also Gandhi was not a good person.
Yeah.
But this is 2000, people didn't really know the full extent, or wasn't advertised the full extent of the not good things that Gandhi did.
Right.
Like his deep, deep racism.
Do you think good things can come out of people who do bad things?
Sure. I mean, Gandhi did accomplish some good things, like freeing India from British rule was a positive, but, you know, it's also good to not represent historical figures as either wholly evil or wholly good. For a lot of reasons.
Yep.
Moving on. Angel and Jack are getting into sort of a pissy taunting fight, and somehow, I don't understand the rules of this red line, I guess Angel is able to grab Jack and pull him over to the other side, and his brother Darren comes down and is like, you know, let him go, and he's like, come on man, there's only one way this is gonna end, and Darren's like, I guess you're right, and then he shoots his brother.
Older brothers are the worst.
Yeah. Come on man, he's your brother. Now he's my dead brother. The thing that I noted about this next scene when they, or one of the things that I noted about this next scene when Lila, bargains for Angel's, freedom, and he is taken to her office, is that, they give him his jacket back.
And his shirt, yeah.
Yeah. He's not wearing his, slave wear. He's, they kept his clothes on file. You know, it's just like any other prison. You know, once you get out, you get your belongings back.
Yeah, so what happened was they cattle prod him, and when he wakes up, he's in Lila's office, and he saw her previously in the ring when he was, like, mm-hmm. peeping their tickets at, like, the very beginning of the episode.
Yeah, and he did the Crouching Dagger, Hidden Dragon thing where she got something off
Lila
the table.
And Lila reveals that Wolfram and Hart really bought Angel's contract. So and she basically says, if you forget about everything and just walk off and don't worry about these people, then you can just walk off.
Your audio died for a minute there, but now it sounds like you're back.
Hey.
Hello.
I was talking about Lila's was explaining he could walk off if he doesn't worry about the slave ring.
Yeah. You know, and this is like sort of what you especially have been getting at like this season is that Angel sees them as worth saving and that this type of compromise, I guess, is sort of the type of compromises that you're often asked to make in adulthood. And Angel is not willing to make them at this point.
Yeah, I mean, this is like what we saw with Kate's dad in the last episode. You know, he made a compromise that he thought he should make as an adult to help his daughter. But then, mm-hmm. of course, Angel doesn't accept the compromise. He's saving everyone case by case.
Mm-hmm. I wrote down, letting Angel walk and then come back was McNamara's worst decision, because he has now proven Angel's point by letting him come back. Like, if he was going to let Angel go, once Angel was like, I'm not leaving, his decisions were to kill Angel at that point, or to just, like, move the ring and, you know, not interfere with Angel again and hope that he's not able to find it. Like, those are his two decisions. Because once Angel leaves and then is shown to choose to come back, then suddenly the speech that he's been saying has now been proven true.
Yep, so Angel decides to go back into demon slavery.
Mm-hmm. Bloodsucker is even crazier than I thought.
Wesley tries... At this point, we cut to Wesley and Cordelia, and Cordy swiped one of those cuff bracelets from the ring.
Mm-hmm. I wrote down earlier, Cordy with the smooth thievery.
That's right. And Wesley's trying to do science magic.
Yep. It's half magic, half medieval technology. I wrote down, how will being under the table protect you? Because they keep hiding under the table. One, they're doing things. I don't. Is it going to explode? I don't know, maybe.
Just like nuclear bomb drills.
Apparently, Wesley has figured out the magical side of it, but is having trouble with the mechanics. He needs something that conducts electricity, but is small enough to get through the, like, locking mechanism, but also supple enough to spring it as well. And Cordelia's like, horsehair. From Keanu.
Her old horse.
Yeah. That she gave a really great name to.
Yeah, for sure.
Named after one of the great actors of our time. Keanu Reeves.
And it works.
Mm-hmm. Keanu once again saves the day. Just like in Speed and The Matrix and pretty much all of his movies.
What was that one he did super recently?
John Wick.
Yeah, John Wright.
John Wick.
John Wick.
He doesn't.
That's right.
He doesn't say. He doesn't really save the day in that one. He just murders everyone. I mean, I guess he saves the day if you're like really pro dog rights.
He kills everyone for dog rights.
Yeah, the
I haven't
this,
seen it.
And this annoying. The plot is this annoying mob boss's son runs into him, doesn't know that he's a retired professional hitman. Tries to buy his car, which he doesn't want to sell, and then he goes to his house, steals his car, beats him up, and kills his dog.
Oh, wow.
Dog, which was a present from his dead wife.
Oh, wow.
And then John Wick is like, all right, I'm going to kill that guy. And for a while, they try to protect him, and so he murders every single person who stands in the way between him and killing this dude's son.
Oh, geez.
Which is, like, everyone in the city.
Wow.
So he's technically the hero, but you have to root for a lot of murder.
Yeah.
To be okay with calling him the hero. Which is what I like about the movie, is that it, like, takes the Taken model to the most extreme, where it's like, not only are we going to replace the daughter with a dog, which is like, so there we're going to challenge you even more. It's like, okay, you felt this way about a human, but would you feel this way about a dog? And then they also make the murder like even more voluminous and disgusting. And it's like, are you still rooting for him now? I like action movies like that.
So we're at Trebko's last fight.
Yeah. McNamara's like, hey, you can decide all you want to come back, but we're going to make you face Trepkos, and this is Trepkos' 21st fight, and if he wins, he gets to leave, so why would he, you know, sacrifice that for the possibility of everyone leaving? Why would he sacrifice guaranteed leaving? And so they're fighting, and Wesley is trying to get Angel the key, when he runs into Crib, who steals it from him and calls Angel a loser.
Yeah, doesn't he, like, free himself, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, it seems he has, like, a small little ethical debate as to whether or not to help anyone else or just leave. But he decides at the last moment that he's not going to let Angel die. And decides to free all the other demons, and during a very devastating fight between Trepkos and Angel, where Angel has won, and then decides that he's not going to kill Trepkos. I also wrote down, wooden spears seem like a rude weapon for a vampire demon fight.
Yeah.
Then Trepkos is about to kill Angel when the demons all rush in and save everyone.
And also, I think he has, like, a moment of not killing him too. Like, he's about to kill him. He's about to kill Angel, and then he doesn't for a second. Like, maybe he would have.
Yeah. I wrote down action editing is average, bad fake slow-mo, and then the extras are really bad actors, because they're all like, they're doing perfectly fine when they're all yelling like, killing blow, killing blow. I mean, that's pretty easy acting to do, but then they're like supposed to like have disappointed faces or whatever when they decide not to kill, and then like Trepkos's demon face is like judging them, and then they're like all like guilty and ashamed, and it's like really embarrassing.
You don't think they did guilty faces good?
No.
Did they look like infomercial actors?
I mean, they looked like they couldn't afford real extras. That's what it looked like. Like they were just, you know, friends and relatives.
people from the set.
Hey, best boy. Put on a suit. You're now an investment banker. I had a demon fighting me.
Yeah, Black. Yeah. So the guy saves Angel and is like, "You're a loser."
Give me your wrist, loser.
Yeah.
And then they slap the free bracelet on McNamara after Cordelia, I believe, knocks him into the ring. And then Trepkos throws him out of the ring, turning into gross McNamara dust.
And it gets all over Cordelia.
Yeah, awful.
So nasty.
Yeah. Once again, showing that the TV show Angel has a lot less issue with killing evil humans than the TV show Buffy does. It's like, it's always, like, it happens on both, but it's always, like, a lot more fraught on Buffy. Like, when it happens, like, oh no, I wish that hadn't happened. We could have reformed him. Whereas on Angel, like, you're clearly supposed to, like, cheer and be like, take that, you son of a...
Right.
Angel says, I could have taken you, but he did take him. He won the fight. And then he gave up. So, I don't know why he says that.
Right.
And then it has a really funny joke at the end, where it's like, we did a good thing. We set the captives free. And then it cuts to them walking away, and you hear, like, a really evil-sounding laugh. And Cordelia's like, didn't we just set a bunch of demons free? And Angel's like, technically, yes. And then it cuts to black.
Yeah, like, and when they're running away, they're, like, they're running, like, you know those little crazy things in Borderlands? They're running like those. They're, like, hobbling off in an evil manner.
Yep. Off to do minor evil.
They're like, ah!
They seem like, they don't seem like truly evil demons. They're probably, like, on the scale of demons, they're like the petty theft of demons. They like setting things on fire, but they're not really dedicated to like the destruction of humanity.
If they would pay more attention to their religion, be more dedicated, they'd be more evil.
Yeah, they're lapsed demons.
That's right.
Continuity, when Cordelia is browsing the demon database, Wesley asks her if they have the vagaries of Odin Tal. This is a reference to the main antagonist of the episode, She. Episode marks the first appearance of Lila Morgan. Producer Tim Minear comments on the contradiction exhibited by Wolfram and Hart in this episode. They offer to free Angel provided he leaves them alone, yet later hire an assassin to kill him in 5x5.
That's next episode, isn't it?
There's one episode between this episode and the Faith Double episodes. Yeah, I mean, I always understood the difference, although Lila was involved in both situations, as, you know, we find out later that the partners don't want Angel dead, that they want him, you know, murky, and confused and angry. But that, you know, that not every single lawyer who works at Wolfram and Hart is aware of this policy, and therefore, you know, Lila and Lindsay, when they decide to put the hit on Angel, are, you know, doing it without the firm's approval.
Oh, that's right, because aren't they thinking, like, oh, the senior partners are going to be so happy with us?
Mm-hmm. Well, Angel ruins a case for Lindsay, and so he's getting chewed out about it, and then he's like, we should take care of him, since he keeps messing things up for us. But they act without the approval of the firm. They're using their own money and, you know, aren't going through contracts or anything like that.
Did I tell you about how Lindsay and his evil hand speech was why I wanted to watch Angel in the first place?
Yes.
Cool.
I love that part.
Well, I'm also going to cover it in that episode, don't worry.
The character of Tom Cribb is based on the boxer Tom Cribb, who is one of England's most celebrated champions of the bare-knuckle era.
Nice.
He made milling on the retreat acceptable as a mode of fighting. He held the title throughout the years of the sport's peak in popularity. Upon his retirement in 1822, he was awarded a lionskin championship belt, the first title belt.
What a pugilist.
Mm-hmm. International titles. In German, this was called Die Gladiatoren von L.A., the Gladiators of L.A. This episode was nominated for an Emmy Award for Outstanding Makeup for a Series. Makes sense.
Really?
There's a lot of makeup in this episode.
That's true. They've hit their stride again from the football demons.
Yeah. A lot of different looking demons. Oh, variations on a classic look, but still. I like the look of them.
They went with the reptile and the amphibian demon look.
Ernie Nellens is the name of the bookie, by the way. And Mellish is the name of the regular-sized guy. Poor Mellish. Alright, do you have anything else to say about...
I'm good.
Apparently the actor who played Melis also played Josh on the episode Fear Itself in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Interesting.
He got to die on both shows. He dies in that episode too.
I wonder how many actors total died on both shows.
Yeah.
It's an elite list.
Yeah, the two or the three people I know who are on both shows, two of them die on one show, but not the other. The Carlos Chicada character, who is the fiance of Doyle's ex-wife, he dies on Buffy, but not on Angel. And then the reverse is true of the actor who plays Sajan on Angel. He played the werewolf hunter on Buffy, and he dies on Angel, but not on Buffy. Buffy just bends his gun up and kills it. Tells him to let the door hit him on the ass on his way out.
I do miss Buffy-isms.
The demon who doesn't talk to Angel at the beginning, who then freaks out and tries to jump across, run out of the line and turns to dust, is the same actor who played the drug dealer demon.
Really?
I'm just looking around on the cast list. That's it. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
If you're enjoying this podcast, please subscribe using a podcast listening application and give us a 5-star rating review on iTunes, because we will appreciate it. But for now, this podcast is the one good thing we did together, Marcia. The only good thing. You make sure to tell the world that. Bye.
Bye.